Welcome to From Beneath the Hollywood Sign. If you love old movies, Hollywood history, or the golden age of filmmaking, you've come to the right place. This is the podcast that talks about amazing stories of Tinseltown from another era and fascinating conversations with writer-producer Steve Kubine and actress-writer Nan McNamara.
So, Steve, did Ava Gardner and Howard Hughes have a good relationship?
Well, they did, until he dislocated her jaw.
What?
Well, don't worry. She hit him back with an ashtray.
From Beneath the Hollywood Sign is the gin joint for you.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
For almost three decades following the Civil War, two rural families, the Hatfields of West Virginia and the McCoys of Kentucky, engaged in a violent and lawless feud near the Tug Fork of the Big Sandy River, which divided the states of West Virginia and Kentucky. More than a dozen lives were lost over the course of the dispute, and nine members of the Hatfield family were imprisoned. But the conflict caught the media's attention, cementing the Hatfield-McCoy feud in American folklore. To this day, the story of the Hatfields and McCoys continues to be told in various forms, appearing in film, literature, and music. But in spite of its cultural prominence, this violent feud was hardly the only bloody dispute of its kind. One such lesser-known feud, but just as violent, was the Black River War of Catahoula Parish, Louisiana, a small southern community just west of Natchez, Mississippi. There, two prominent southern families, the Littles and Joneses, became embroiled in an epic dispute that gradually escalated in violence between 1847 and 1870, ultimately resulting in the loss of over a half dozen lives for reasons that are entirely unknown today. My name is Brandon Schecksnyder, and you are listening to Southern Gothic. Prior to the Civil War, Confederate Brigadier General St. John Richardson Little was a wealthy plantation owner in Catahoula Parish, Louisiana. There, he owned four tracts of land on the Black River, totaling over 1,500 acres of property, upon which he had a workforce of 150 enslaved men and women. He named his plantation Yanata, and according to the 1860 census, Little had a real property value of $240,000. The equivalent of $7.4 million in today's currency. But after returning from the war, Little would find himself not only facing bankruptcy, but also an ongoing feud with a neighbor that would end with his untimely death. This neighbor was Charles Jones. Jones arrived in Catahoula Parish from Kentucky sometime between 1837 and 1840. There, he established Elmy Plantation on the Black River, just miles from Little, who arrived in Catahoula at about the same time. Jones became a successful planter, and in 1860, his assets reached $300,000, approximately $9.2 million today, and included between 85 and 100 enslaved men, women, and children. Theoretically, the Little and Jones families should have gotten along well. Both men established themselves in the parish at roughly the same time, rising in wealth and status together. And some evidence does, in fact, point toward the men having at the very least a cordial relationship at one point. But in May of 1848, Little wrote in his personal diary, quote, "This man has been in pursuit of my life since October last." It is unclear if Little knew why Jones was threatening him, and evidence to suggest the cause is contradictory, with various stories appearing and shifting over time. Some as bizarre as that the dispute was merely over geese. But for whatever the reason, on April 26, 1948, violence broke out in Catahoula Parish. Philip and Eliza Nichols were close personal friends of the Little family, who owned a large piece of property that Charles Jones supposedly wanted for himself. So in an effort to drive the Nichols from the area, Jones publicly maligned the character in virtue of Mrs. Nichols. Upset by her neighbor's treatment, Eliza requested that Little accompany her to confront the man. Little agreed, and on the morning of April 26, 1864, the pair arrived at the avenue of Elmy Plantation. Yet as Eliza Nichols approached Jones, instead of speaking, she pulled out a pistol and shot the man in the face. Jones turned to run for the safety of his home as Eliza shot at him a second time, but the wounds were not fatal. In a letter, Little wrote of the event, "I arrived there only in time to see her shoot him repeatedly and to take her away in safety, for treachery and rascality was apparent all around." In his personal diary, Little stated that Mrs. Nichols shot Jones when he unbuttoned his coat, and that Little's only regret was that he, quote, "did not finish Jones off." After all, Little had written of numerous threats against his life from Jones in the past, claiming that he once told him of how easy it would be to kill him without facing criminal charges. But Little still chose not to act that day and would repeatedly claim that he joined Mrs. Nichols as a personal friend, and accompanied her, unaware of the action she planned to take. Unfortunately, as Jones recovered from his wounds, he did not place the blame on Mrs. Nichols, but rather St. John Little. In town, rumors began to circulate of a possible revenge attack, and public threats were made by Jones's nephew, Sam Smith, who declared that he would kill those who shot his uncle and threatened to go after Little's family and friends in Mississippi if they too were not paying notice. Judge J.G. Tollifer, the most influential man in the parish, made an attempt to intervene and mediate the feud. But little questioned the judge's motives, especially given his close friendship with the aggressor. So tensions only escalated. The two families became increasingly consumed with fortifying their homes and arming themselves with guns and ammunition. And the community only made the situation worse as unofficial factions began forming, with groups that became far too eager to engage in threats of violence. But in 1849, the feud seemed to come to a close after Charles Jones and his wife left Catahoula for several years, traveling to New Orleans and then later Cincinnati. However, this brief period of peace would not last long, as several accounts claim that threats continued soon after their departure. It is uncertain if these were sent explicitly by Jones himself, or merely his friends in town taking it upon themselves to act. But by April 1852, when Charles Jones returned to his Elmy plantation, the period of peace had clearly come to an end, as Jones was accompanied by what appeared to be hired assassins, including a man named Richard Pryor, who had a notorious reputation of being a, quote, noted blackleg without means or character. Threats of violence reignited with full force, and community members began to splinter back into their groups. Jones's nephew, Sam Smith, once again proclaimed that he intended to kill Little. This time, however, he actually attempted to see it through. First-hand accounts say that on election day that year, Smith and Pryor hid along the path where they expected Little to travel into town to vote, with hopes of ambushing the man. Yet for some reason, whether Little was made aware of the plot and foiled it, or Smith and Pryor merely failed, no violence occurred that day, but the attempt would certainly not be the last. The next attack came from Jones's friend, Henry Huntington, who confronted Little at Yenata and discharged his pistol before Little disarmed him. In response, Huntington publicly called Little a coward and challenged him to a duel on the Texas state line. But Little refused, certain that this was yet another plot to ambush him and take his life. Following these incidents, Little once again began purchasing weapons and fortifying his home, as yet another Jones sympathizer named Samuel Glenn also made public threats against the Little family. Threats that this time would culminate in two men dead. On June 26, 1852, Little took it upon himself to take offensive action and ambush two men traveling on the road toward Yenata. Men that he believed to be Samuel Glenn and Richard Pryor. Unfortunately, he was wrong. Although one of the men was indeed Glenn, the other was a neighbor named Moses Wiggins. Neither Wiggins or Glenn had ill intentions at the time of the attack. Yet unaware, Little killed them anyway before realizing his error. So St. John Little was arrested for murder. Y'all, I want to take a quick minute to tell you about one of my favorite nonprofit organizations here in Middle Tennessee. It's called Poster Nashville. Now, this organization supports people during times of housing or medical crises by providing compassionate, temporary care for their pets. That's right. Poster helps secure loving homes for beloved little furballs when their human companions are going through things that might otherwise cause them to have to give them up. But since Poster began back in 2020, they've been able to reunite nearly 250 pets with their loving pet parents after they were able to secure housing, keeping families together through tough times. Of course, y'all, I have to say from personal experience, it's been an awesome program to be around. My kids and I have been fortunate enough to hang out with some of the pups, and trust me, what Poster is doing through a devoted network of volunteers is absolutely heartwarming. So if you'd like to help, Poster is in the middle of their annual fundraiser right now, trying to hit a goal of $20,000, and it would mean the world to me if you'd consider helping us get there. All you got to do is visit southerngothicmedia.com/bark. That's right, southerngothicmedia.com/bark.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Little's friends and local supporters maintained a defense of his actions. After all, there were well-established public threats made against this man's life, particularly ones that specifically claimed he would be waylaid and killed upon the road where this violence took place. So Little hired a well-established attorney from Natchez, Mississippi, and after nearly 2 years, he was acquitted in April of 1854. But the threats to his life continued to grow until 1857, when the most legitimate attempt to end the feud occurred. A legal document was drawn up between the two prominent citizens, whereby both parties agreed that, quote, Little and the Joneses would pass one another as strangers and without recognition. The document continued on to state that in the future, should either party take issue with the other, they would alert their opponent before taking action. But St. John Little refused to sign this document, allowing the feud to continue. The onset of the Civil War in 1861 brought a new period of peace between the Little and Jones families, as both men left Louisiana to fight for the Confederate Army. Little rose through the ranks of the Confederacy and eventually earned the title of Brigadier General, commanding the Arkansas Brigade of the Army of Tennessee from 1862 to 1863. He took part in battles at Perryville, Murfreesboro, and Chickamauga before taking command of military actions west of the Mississippi River. As for Charles Jones, he earned the rank of lieutenant colonel and was placed second in command of the 17th Volunteer Louisiana Infantry before being injured and sent home from the war. But for both men, civilian life after their service was drastically changed, and the economic fate of their private lives was quickly determined by their political choices. Charles Jones chose loyalty to William Pitt Kellogg, the northern installed governor, as a way to protect his estate and rebuild his fortunes. But Little remained a staunch and loyal Southerner, refusing to support an outside northerner in control of his homeland. Little's view in opposition to the Kellogg government won him esteem with many local community members who held similar views, shifting the tide of public favor in Catahoula toward his family. But without an enslaved workforce to tend to his fields, Little faced economic ruin. He attempted to receive help from local banks, but soon found that the only ones available to him had been established by either Northerners or Kellogg loyalists, who would only lend money to the ex-Confederate with incredibly high interest rates. So Little had no choice but to sell his beloved plantation at public auction, declaring bankruptcy in December of 1868, citing 28 creditors and a total indebtedness of over $86,000, a total of over $1.5 million today. Charles Jones took advantage of the situation. Thanks to his political connections, Jones's financial circumstances rebounded quickly after the war. And upon learning Little's plantation was to be sold, he began negotiating with a third party to buy the property and then resell it to Jones. But upon discovering his plan to acquire Yenata, Little sent Jones a warning that it would not be, quote, healthy for Jones to purchase the graves of Little's family. Unfortunately, Yenata was ultimately sold. But in the end, Jones's third party kept the property for himself, infuriating Jones and fueling tensions between the families even further. Then, on February 14th, 1870, the two-decade-long feud came to a bloody end aboard the river steamer St. Mary. For reasons unknown, St. John Little boarded the ship headed towards New Orleans. But then, on one of its frequent stops, Charles Jones and his sons William and Cuthbert boarded the St. Mary as well. But unlike Jones, they were armed and ready to act. At the time, Little was seated, having lunch with several friends. And upon the sight of the Jones men, he quickly stood to defend himself. But two shots had already been fired. One by Jones himself, and another by his son. Both hit Little in the chest. And after falling to the ground, Little was able to free his gun and fire a single shot at his assailants as they fled. But the shot hit the ceiling and merely resulted in further aggression from Jones's sons. Little died almost immediately, and the doctor who later examined him found a total of 7 gunshots in his body, 3 of which could have caused his death. The community was shocked and outraged by the murder, of which a local newspaper reported on February 18th. A gentleman, a soldier, a patriot, and a good citizen has been violently removed from the scene of his labors and usefulness to a home in eternity, closing an earthly career full of incident, rich in high and noble purposes, alternated with seasons of propriety and adversity, always upright and honorable. General St. John Little is no more. Charles Jones's son, Cuthbert, claimed that Little had provoked the fight and drew his gun first. But Colonel Charles H. Morrison, a witness to the event, said that the two men had merely, quote, eyed each other sternly before Jones advanced on Little. So the men gave themselves up to the authorities without a fight and were placed under arrest. But due to Jones's relationship with the sheriff, a fellow Kellogg government ally, the three men were allowed to stay at the sheriff's home rather than being locked up in the local jail. But as the days passed, area residents began demanding retribution, angry at the possibility that Jones's ties to the Republican leadership would let him off without punishment. So on February 27th, at approximately 2 a.m., a mob of about 30 men assembled and stormed into the sheriff's home. The men allowed everyone but the Joneses to leave before taking justice into their own hands and executing Charles Jones and his son William. Only Cuthbert managed to survive the mob as he slipped out a second-story window and clung to a ledge until he was able to make his escape. It was then that the Jones-Liddell feud, or Black River War, had finally come to an end. Eerily enough, it is said that a prophecy given by old Mrs. Glenn, the mother of Samuel Glenn, who had been killed by Little years earlier, had come true. A prophecy that claimed, quote, Little's and Jones's bodies would contain as many shots as her son's did, and neither of them would die a natural death. Unfortunately, the story that we now know as the Black River War is somewhat one-sided in favor of Little due to the bias of historical resources chronicling the events. In spite of his financial failings, Little's position in the Civil War, in opposition to the resulting federally imposed leadership, gave him a much higher standing in the community than Jones, resulting in many of the newspaper accounts to slant heavier in his favor. But even more influential on the longevity and bias of this tale is that St. John Richardson Little wrote a memoir which has since become published under the title Little's Record. While much of this memoir is focused on his time in the war, the writings have also provided historians with insight into his thoughts and opinions during his feud with Jones, which naturally paint him as the victim to Charles Jones's unfounded hatred towards him. As a result, we will unlikely ever know the true facts behind the story of the Black River War. A needless conflict that lasted decades and tore a community apart. A feud whose violence rivals the more infamous American story of the Hatfields and McCoys, ending similarly with no clear winner, only the loss of far too many lives. My name is Brandon Schecksnyder, and you've been listening to Southern Gothic.
Southern Gothic is an independently produced podcast created by siblings Brianne and Brandon Schecksnyder with the support of listeners like you. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to receive even more content, including ad-free episodes, head over to our Patreon page today. The link is in the show notes.
Lucky Little Shack. What's something you learned in history class that you feel like wasn't the whole truth? Better yet, what's something you didn't learn at all that was omitted completely? That's what I like to call redacted history. My name is Andre White, the host of the Redacted History Podcast, the place where history's forgotten events, heroes, and villains get their story told, one episode at a time. The Redacted History Podcast. Real history never dies. Stream the Redacted History Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
Hello, my name is Matt, host of the Pirate History Podcast. Pirates rank among the most mythologized and romanticized of all historical figures. It can become easy to forget that pirates were real people that had real-world concerns. If you like tales of high seas adventure, derring do, and also want to learn more about who Blackbeard supported to be king, you can learn more about all of that at the Pirate History Podcast.